Good evening. My name is Beth Haddon. I'm the volunteer chair of the CJF Programming Committee, and I'm standing in this evening for Bob Lewis, who's the chair of CJF, because he's having root canal as we speak, emergency root canal. So he sends his regrets that he can't be here. And running through his working from his notes here, I want to begin by telling you a little bit about CJF, which is a voluntary, not-for-profit organization, and we exist to promote excellence in journalism. We do that through a number of initiatives. We operate two websites, JSource and Projégé, in partnership with, I don't know how many journalism schools across the country, most of the journalism schools across the country, I think. People are nodding. Good. And we also offer professional development opportunities, specifically with Rotman U of T. And we also, we celebrate excellence through an annual awards program every June. And we also promote public dialogue about journalistic issues and concerns through regular public forums like the one that you're attending this evening. These forums are sponsored by the BMO Financial Group, and we extend our thanks to them. We couldn't do it without them. So welcome to you all, and tonight we're going to turn our attention, as you know, to covering municipal politics, which in my time in Toronto, I don't think I've ever had so many conversations about or seen such interest in municipal affairs, which I think is a great thing. It was always a neglected layer of government in my mind. And we have a panel of City Hall reporters and columnists that I'd like to thank very much for attending. And my job is to introduce our moderator, who will introduce the panel and then engage in the dialogue with them. And our moderator is Jackson Proskauf from, as global viewers know, from Global Television. He's the municipal affairs reporter at City Hall. And his background, which is not as long as some of the backgrounds of some of us here. He started out his journalism career in high school, I was reading, in Calgary. And after he graduated from the University, was it the University of Calgary?
That's right.
Yeah. And he joined Global in Lethbridge and then worked his way to Hamilton and then Toronto. It's a Canadian journalistic journey, not unusual. And I'm very grateful to him for agreeing to do this with us tonight. So, Jackson, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Please welcome.
Thanks for that, Beth. And the reason we're here tonight, as she was saying, is that it's really an incredible and engaging time, not only to work at City Hall, but really to try and follow what's going on. I think most people in this room would probably go home, and whether it's at the coffee shop or the dinner table, what's going on at City Hall is bound to come up. It's also an interesting time, though, to work inside the building, because there's been a real shift in the way that things work around City Hall. For example, we now have a mayor and administration that are a little more choosy about which media outlets they talk to. Some they don't talk to at all. There's less information, less access than perhaps we've seen in the past. And so the question we're going to talk about tonight is, does that matter? Do we as journalists have a right to expect a certain level of access to the people in charge of our city? Does the decisions made by the mayor affect us? Do we have a right to expect access? Do we have a right to expect a schedule from the mayor? And does that really change things at the end of the day? Does it change the job? There's also, of course, the internet factor, and that's something I want to bring up tonight because tweeting from this event is encouraged, and if you are tweeting, the hashtag is CJF Forum. But Twitter has also changed our jobs at City Hall quite a bit in ways that we'll get into a little bit throughout the night. So a sense of how things are going to work tonight here. Everyone's going to have a few minutes to walk through some opening remarks, their thoughts on what it's like to cover City Hall in the Rob Ford era. After that, a bit of moderated discussion, some back and forth. We'll work through some of these topics. And then at the end of the night, we're going to have a chance to hear from you. And you can come up to that microphone in the middle of the room, ask us questions. So if there's something on your mind, if there's somebody's brain you want to pick, feel free. The microphone will be right there at the end of the night. All we're going to ask is that you keep your questions tight, and we'll try and keep our answers nice and simple for you. So I'd like to introduce everyone else who's here at the table tonight. First of all, Robin Doolittle from the Toronto Star. She's one of the City Hall reporters in their pretty sizable bureau, and she has to deal with the challenges of a mayor who doesn't necessarily like talking to the Toronto Star. In fact, she recently traveled all the way to Guadalajara to track him down, and maybe spend some time at the Pan Am Games as well. Next to her is Marcus G, who is the Toronto columnist for the Globe and Mail. Marcus also has the distinction of, on a hot summer day last summer, dipping his toes in the water at all 8 public beaches in Toronto. I don't think he came back with any extra toes, did you?
A couple fewer.
Okay. Next to him is Jerry Agar, host of the Jerry Agar Show on News Talk 1010. Jerry, no stranger, not a man who wants to hold back his opinions about City Hall, and he talks about it daily on his show. In fact, his colleague Jim Richards had to bring me on the air today to give me a bit of a primer on how to deal with Jerry and his opinions, because he certainly won't hold back. And last but not least is Royson James, who's the City Hall columnist for the Toronto Star. We were just speaking earlier. Royson just celebrated his 14th anniversary covering Toronto City Hall. So he's been there since amalgamation. He's seen it all and has the insight on how things have changed from the Mel Asman era to the David Miller era to the Rob Ford era that we see today. So to get things kicked off, I'd like to get 4 or 5 minutes from each of you, your thoughts on what it's like covering City Hall under Rob Ford, and if there's anything in particular that really stands out to you about perhaps how times have changed. And we'll start with Robin Doolittle from The Star.
Hi, everybody. I don't know how much times have changed, because I've only been at City Hall for about 2 years. Before that, I was a police reporter for The Star, and when they moved me over to local municipal politics, I thought, oh my God, this is going to be so boring. And it's obviously not at all. One of my least favorite things to do is tell people what I do for a living that I just randomly meet, because if you say you cover Rob Ford, it immediately stops whatever conversation you were trying to have, and every single person you meet has an insane amount of opinions. And then when you mention that you work at the Toronto Star, then it's a whole other spinning around. People will stop and overhear you as you're talking. There's 5 of us in the bureau at the Star, and as you all know, the mayor does not speak to us or send us press releases. And that's got a lot of attention. It makes our job challenging but interesting. One of my favorite things was going to Mexico, because it really was just me and Rob Ford. So there really wasn't anywhere to go. And we'd go to a couple of events, the provincial events, and there was no other media there that really cared that he was there. And so we did get a picture together, actually, which I have not posted, but I do have on my phone, and I'll show you later if you keep it a secret. So anyway, I don't have much more to say than that. Full disclosure, I have the flu, and don't hug me later on. But I'm happy to answer any questions you have later.
All right, thanks a lot, Robin. Marcus G., your thoughts. What's it like covering City Hall under Rob Ford?
Well, let me compare it a bit with the Miller era. I was there for a year or so under David Miller, and he was pretty even-handed and fair with the press. I think it's fair to say Royson may have a different opinion, because he covered it for longer. But generally, he would give access to most media when he was giving out interviews, and he would give fairly generous amount of time, half an hour or something, for a sort of year-end interview. He would be available for scrums on big stories. You would know where he was going every day. He was pretty professional about the press. A different thing now under Rob Ford. We don't get a schedule, which is totally absurd. I mean, we have no idea what he's doing day to day. If he's cutting a ribbon into Etobicoke, he doesn't even tell us that. If you look at Naheed Nenshi in Calgary, he has on his website a list of who he's meeting every hour of every day on the website. We have to FOI to find out what ribbon Rob Ford is cutting. And even then, he sends us a blank sheet that says, Monday, meetings, and that's it. And so, you know, we don't know who he's meeting, which is really weird because a lot of the stuff he's doing is fairly innocuous. The boycott of the Star is just absurd. I mean, to have the mayor of the biggest city in the country boycotting the biggest paper in the city, just unheard of. I don't think anybody's ever done it in a big North American city. So that's absurd. So and his interviews tend to be brief. His scrums tend to be brief, and his press secretary jumps in pretty quickly after a few minutes. Now, on the other hand, if you had 10 minutes instead of 3, you wouldn't necessarily get a lot more. And, you know, we say, wow, if we had a half hour instead of 10 minutes for Rob Ford, then we go, well, you know, maybe that wouldn't be that much better. So the other thing to say about it is we shouldn't, I mean, have all that having been said about Rob Ford's press relations, we shouldn't piss and moan too much because, as Robin says, it's a fantastic story. Everybody's talking about it. It's one of the biggest, he's probably the most watched political figure in the country. City Hall used to be kind of a sleepy beat, right? Oh, they send you to City Hall, poor guy. But now it's like, as Robin says, you go to a party and everybody goes, whether they hate Rob Ford or they like him, it's, wow, you cover City Hall? Wow, you must be busy. It's sort of like, and they just want to know all about it. They're fascinated by Rob Ford, and he's a pretty interesting figure, whatever you... And the other thing to say about it is, you know, despite his restrictions, City Hall is still a pretty open place. I mean, we can go upstairs, right upstairs. We have an access card to the counselor's office suite. So you can go up, kind of knock on Doug Ford's, well, maybe not if you're the Star, but on a counselor's door. Yeah. And he'll talk to you. The Star may not be able to call Doug Ford, but I can call him up on his cell phone. He'll talk to me. This summer I called Doug up because I'd heard about this funny rumor about the Portlands. I said, now, a sensible politician would have said, you know, I'm busy, call me back later. But I said, is there any truth to this stuff about, like, a monorail and down at the Portlands? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would be great. Monorail, hotel, Ferris rail. And I'm writing all this down. You know, I almost feel like saying, Doug, why are you telling me all this stuff? This is bad for you. but no, I put it in the paper. Yeah, and the other one was the Atwood thing. We were scrumming Doug after a meeting, and I said kind of innocently, he was about to walk away, sort of said, what do you think about, you know, Margaret Atwood's been kind of critical about the library's policy. He turns to us, he gets his glare on, and he said, Margaret Atwood, you know, I wouldn't know her if she walked down the street. You know, what does she know? And we all kind of look at each other like this. And our jaws kind of drop, and we realize we've got a huge story here. And my friend Natalie from the National Post turns to me and she says, I love that man. And so, I mean, the thing is, it's really a feast for a reporter down at City Hall. You have pretty good access despite the mayor's restrictions. The civil service at City Hall is actually really helpful, and you can talk to the director of parks or whatever, and they'll brief you thoroughly. Compared to Queen's Park or Ottawa, I believe, I haven't worked in those places, but it's incredibly open, and the whole process is very open as well. This whole 6-month budget thing there is no cabinet secrecy. Because there's no cabinet. The executive committee, which is the cabinet, has open meetings. There is no party discipline. So the prime minister doesn't tell all his MPs and cabinet ministers to shut up. You know, we will talk to Karen Stintz, who's supposed to be part of the mayor's team, and she'll blab. Or you'll talk to Denzel Minim Wong, who's also supposed to be, he'll sometimes blab. So it's actually, for a reporter, it's a great place to work. Rob Ford notwithstanding. In fact, thank you, Rob Ford. He's the gift that keeps on giving.
Thanks a lot, Marcus. Jerry Agar, you're the only person at this table who's not a full-time member of the City Hall Press Gallery, but that kind of gives you a chance to step back and look at things from the outside. So I'm curious your take. I mean, you look at all the media coverage, and that factors into your show a lot of the time, the way different papers cover City Hall. Right. What do you see about City Hall in this day?
Well, I would like to echo one thing, and by, as somebody who has to 5 days a week find 3 hours worth of things to talk about, thank God for Rob Ford and City Hall today, because there's always something. In fact, sometimes I come in and say, can we do a whole show without talking about them today? And sometimes we can't, actually, because there's always something, and there will be now with this no board report and the unions, et cetera. I mean, there's constantly something to talk about. However, to this idea of this unprecedented situation where an entity is not being communicated with by the mayor, I would like to pass along sentiments on myself from myself and one other. Welcome to our world. You know, when you're a right-wing talk show host like me, there's a plethora of politicians who won't talk to you. The premier of this province will never talk to me. And that's just the way it is, because I'm opinionated. I say what I want to say. He doesn't like it. He doesn't want to deal with it. He doesn't want to answer the questions I want to put in his face, and so he won't come on the show. And I was talking to Sue Ann Levy, who may have been here if she hadn't broken her leg, and if she would like to hand some of her shoes to some of the people who think that access is always totally given from the mayor to various members of the media, because it was, while there was a lot of fodder for her through the Miller years, it wasn't like they were chums. Sue Ann Levy of the Sun and Mayor Miller. So that's something that I have dealt with. And although I am Canadian, I started my talk radio career in the United States and lived in a number of places in the United States. And in all of the markets where I was doing talk shows, there was always somebody or a group of people who would have nothing to do with us. Not only me, but maybe the entire radio station. I worked for a little bit for WABC in New York, the home radio station of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin, if you've heard of any of those people. The Democrats are not real thrilled about the whole radio station, and that's how it is. Some of them will still give access, but many of them will not. And to me, that's just part of how it is. I'm not scandalized by this. And I also, by the way, would say the mayor doesn't talk directly to the Star or give them an immediate press release. So what? There are plenty of newspapers in this town, many of whom, by the way, immediately hand the press release to the Star. And there are plenty of television stations and radio stations and people who are doing various things of various sizes online. So it's not like the public is somehow shut off from information. As Marcus just said, it's a pretty open place down there. Lots of reporters getting lots of stories. The stories are not going uncovered. And eventually, Rob Ford won't be mayor, and whoever is will talk to the Toronto Star. And it's not like all of a sudden the clouds will part and the sun will shine and the grass will go green and, oh my God, everything's okay now. It's not going to be like that. It'll just be another day in Toronto. And we'll cover, and maybe the next mayor won't talk to me. That's just the way it is, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe it's a new experience for the Toronto Star. Well, good. It's a learning experience then. That's how life goes. And to be perfectly blunt about it, I don't blame the Star. Or I mean the mayor. I don't blame the mayor, frankly. This started with a story that they didn't have and that the Globe and Mail corrected, and they have yet to admit it. The publisher of the paper came on my show and was as mealy-mouthed about it as he could possibly be. Just man up and say you got the story wrong. He didn't accost a football player, and then maybe things will change. Should the mayor be bigger than that and get past it? Maybe. I don't know. He's a human being like anybody else. If you got accused of assault and you didn't do it, you wouldn't take it very kindly, I don't think. He still talks to the Sun, and they're the ones who outed him, by the way, on the situation in Florida where he was drinking and driving and had drugs in his pocket. I don't think he was thrilled when that story came out during the election either, but it came from the Sun. But he still talks to them. You know why? Because that was true. That actually happened. So this thing looks differently to me, I guess, than it does to everybody else, but maybe that's why I'm here.
I think it is. Yay. Thanks, Jerry. Finally, Royson, 14 years on the job, three mayors. What stands out to you about this mayor in particular?
Well, good evening, everyone. I mean, what stands out right now is that it's a good thing that Jerry doesn't consider himself a journalist. Because
I don't.
I know. I'm saying it's a good thing. Because I mean, and I will get to the whole situation with the Star later. I mean, I've been covering City Hall since the early 80s and have been a columnist since 1998 when we started with amalgamation. And the worst possible position that you could find yourself in as a city columnist is to be in lockstep with the mayor. The closest I came to that death sentence was with Mel Lastman in his first term. I mean, I knew the man from North York. I spent several years covering him as mayor of North York. He would feed me stories daily. I mean, I really couldn't exist without him. I knew how he thought. We talked to each other just about every day. I understood him inside out. So, when he became the mayor of the mega city, I mean, I really understood the guy. We had a great relationship. And then, I had to hold him accountable. So that was very, very difficult. I mean, I did it, but it was a difficult job. And when I did it too well, I would hear about it from him for sure. Then David Miller became mayor, and my job became easier, but it was still difficult because I agreed with a lot of his policies. What I disagreed with was the way he did things and what I considered his arrogance and his lack of respect for the way people think about how the money was spent at City Hall. And I heard from a lot of you, I imagine, who were sitting here, and a lot of residents who thought that I was way too hard on David Miller. I criticized him a lot, despite the fact that I agreed with his policies. So that was a bit difficult, somebody who you agree with, but you would tackle the way they did things. And then we got Rob Ford, and suddenly it was hallelujah. I mean, this is the perfect situation to be in. Rob, as you know, is bombastic. He says what's on his mind. He often doesn't tell the truth. He says things that he can't back up and that you can clearly show from the numbers and from the facts that it's not possible. He makes promises that is impossible to keep. And so for somebody who is supposed to provide analysis and judgment and perspective at City Hall, it becomes very easy to slam the guy. I laugh when I get letters from people who say the Star has some type of organized, orchestrated campaign against the mayor. I don't think the Star is that organized. They couldn't organize themselves to fight anyone. They've never told me what to write in 14 years as a columnist, and I've had one column spiked, and it had nothing to do with politics. So I pretty much have clear mandate to write what I think at City Hall. Now, the mayor can talk to me or not. Doesn't really matter for my job. It's a little bit more difficult for somebody like Robin Doolittle, who is a reporter. I'm giving my opinions, I'm giving my perspectives. And I know a lot more people at City Hall than the mayor does. I mean, having covered City Hall since the 80s, the people who are running the city, I knew them when they were nobodies, budget analysts who are now CFOs. So we have relationships that go way back, and they'll talk to me and tell me things even though they're working directly for the mayor. So his not talking to me really doesn't affect my job. It's the same thing with counselors. I have said strong things about city counselors over the years. I called Michael Thompson, the only black counselor on city council, I called him an Uncle Tom once, and he still talks to me. I called Giorgio Mammoliti. What did I call him again? I described him as a man who has mastered the art of political harlotry, and he still talks to me. James Pasternak. I described as James Pastor Snack after he wanted to have more snacks at City Hall. And, I mean, those people still talk to me. And if they don't talk to you, that's fine. There are 45 counselors. If 41 of them don't talk to you, you still have a lot more sources than a lot of other reporters in other papers. That's not the issue. The issue is that the mayor of a metropolitan city must talk to all the press. You don't have to give them interviews, But if you are sending out news releases, if you're sending official communique, if you're sending official notices, if you're giving official briefings about the city, then you give that to all reporters, to all media outlets. You don't pick and choose who you want to talk to. Because if you decide you don't want to talk to the Star today, then tomorrow it could be the Globe, and the next day the Sun. And then pretty soon you can decide who you want to talk to and who you want to deliver information to. That's ridiculous. I mean, any journalist would be able to see that's certainly something that cannot be tolerated. As far as the Star is concerned and the reason why the mayor stopped talking to us, recently, I mean, I read this story again that supposedly caused the mayor to stop talking to us. And the story is bulletproof, despite what Jerry just said. Bulletproof. Every reporter in this room would write that story, and every publication would publish it. Because it's bulletproof. And you guys can ask me details about it, and I can read you the first six paragraphs. The mayor has his say. It says very clearly, the mayor says he did not do this categorically. The story clearly says that there is a dispute as to whether or not he roughed up the player. Some people said he did, and some people said he didn't. And it's all there in the first six, seven paragraphs of the story. So, you know, if the position then is, as reporter, if you have sources that say a person or a mayor has done, or a mayoral candidate has done ABC, and the candidate says, I did not do ABC, is the position then of journalists to say, okay, fine, sorry, I guess you didn't do it? If that was the case, when we wrote the story about him at the ACC, when he was drunk, right, and was berating all those patrons, when I first interviewed him, he said no. And I said, you know, they're slandering my name, and this is ridiculous. And, you know, nobody knows, how could they do this to me? That's what he said the day before. Once the story got in, and we had his business card from the person who he berated at the ACC, then the next day he came clean and said, well, I was embarrassed, you know, and I shouldn't have done that. No, I'm sorry. And the same thing happened with the story in Miami. So because the mayor says, I didn't do this, it doesn't mean, that doesn't mean that the story is over. You quote the sources that says he did it. You quote the sources that say he didn't. And that's your job. Your job is to throw the information out there for public consumption and then see what happens. And the story is bulletproof. If it wasn't bulletproof, believe me, his lawyers would have sued the Toronto Star. They threatened to. They had every opportunity to, and they didn't. And as I'm open to questions on that and any other issue at City Hall.
Thanks so much, Royston. And I think this, we've all spoken about relations with the Toronto Star, so maybe, Robin, you can kind of kick things off here. Describe for me what you get access to, more importantly, what you're left out of the mix on. So just so we're perfectly clear.
Sure, yeah. I mean, this is part of the most interesting thing about this whole Star blackout debate is a lot of people don't actually know what we're not getting access to. And to be honest, people within the mayor's office don't seem to understand exactly what we don't have access to. After the chair of our board wrote the front page story saying the Star has been, you know, left off of these lists and we are going to fight this, the mayor was quoted as saying, I don't know what they're complaining about. A press release goes to the gallery and everyone gets it. And yes, that is how that is supposed to be. And what's happened is they've just removed our email addresses off of the press gallery email list. But it was a funny statement. It seemed like he didn't quite understand. And at first we thought maybe he's just trying to spin it. But in subsequent conversations with some of his staffers, it seems that perhaps they really did think that we were getting these press releases. Like there's a bulletin board downstairs, and then they tack it in. So it really comes down to, like as Marcus said, there is no schedule or itinerary, which is completely unheard of. When you call other cities and speak to other staffers from other mayors, they're like, "But how do you know where to go?" Like they're just flabbergasted by it. So that's kind of interesting. But we don't get those, although no one does. We don't get any official press releases from the mayor's office. So the bureaucracy at City Hall will send us releases. But anything about Ford or from his office doesn't come to us. And that's pretty much it. And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but you know what? It's more of just a strain on our press gallery colleagues, because we kind of, at the Star, we're at the far end, and we kind of walk out and we're like, is anything happening today? Like anyone, you know, your reporter covering a beat, you get to know the people that you're working with. It was the same when I was on crime. You know, if you're at a murder scene and, oh, the son's not here, you want to, you know, give the reporter a call and be like, hey, did you know this is happening? Like, unless it's, you know, a scoop that you're working on. These kind of things, you share and you help one another out. So it's kind of just a stress on our colleagues, and it's really about the principle of the thing. We're, of course, completely capable of doing our jobs, and as Royson said, their bureaucracy still talks to us. The counselors are great. They all talk to us. They're all on Ford's committees, and the mayor, you know, doesn't seem to mind the counselors talking to us. It's never come up. But it's really just this press release issue and his public appearances. But it's really, you know, for the principle of the thing, it's important that we do get those.
So, Jerry, I want your take on this, because you say, you know, there's politicians who won't speak to you. Is there a difference in your mind between a politician not granting you an interview and shutting you off from the basic flow of information that everyone else gets? Is there a difference there?
Shutting off CFRB.
Mm-hmm. If your newsroom didn't get press releases from the premier's office, is that different from the premier not talking to you and granting you an interview?
Yes, it is different. I acknowledge that. Okay, I'll tell you where I agree with Royson, by the way, as we get this nice little exchange going. On the ACC thing, yeah, you were right. You were right on the story. But as somebody who is, my job is not, I'm not a journalist. I'm engaged with people during my show and all day long. It's more like a forum that's going on. And I know that people who hated the mayor and people who liked the mayor, he was a counselor at the time, when they read that story in your paper, they read he assaulted a football player. And the next day, as I remember this, the Globe and Mail actually talked to the player, which I would have thought a journalist would do before writing the story. I get stuff every day that I will look at about people, politicians I don't like or whatever, and I'll think, you know, for me, for my purposes as a talk show host, it would be kind of cool if this was true. But very often it isn't. And I'm not going to just take the thing off my email or my Twitter or wherever and blast it on the air just because.
That wasn't done. That wasn't taken off on a Twitter or email. They had multiple sources.
Multiple sources who said turned they were out wrong? To be wrong. Well, the player said they were. It was wrong.
But the football story is,
and it wasn't just one
like
player.
Move past it anyway. Like, that's not the issue.
No, it is for the mayor, though. That's the
but
point.
But every time that we try to talk about
I've
this issue,
I've talked to the mayor. It is the issue.
Right, but this whole idea of was that story bad? Was that story good? At the end of the day, that story stood up. The Star stood behind it. And this is about a principle of the matter of just including us in general press releases. But every time we try to have a discussion about it, it comes back to this one story, and we're debating the validity of that story. And that debate's kind of over.
Marcus,
it is like for you. It isn't for the mayor.
But do you think there's any reason why that football story in particular is something the mayor has hung his hat on? Because, for example, there is still this dispute out there that hasn't been settled about what really happened when the mayor called 911 when the CBC crew showed up in his driveway. The CBC has stood by one version of its story. The police chief has disputed that, but that hasn't changed the mayor's relationship with the CBC. Marcus, do you have any feelings as to why the football story and the Toronto Star have been an issue that has stuck?
Well, for the mayor, I mean, the football story hit him right where he hurt, because his whole thing is, you know, he loves football and he's very invested in helping these kids, and he's been doing it for years, you know, and he loves what he does, and so it was the deepest sort of slander or libel to him that he would be accused of being kind of beating up or being abusive toward his players, because his whole. You know, I'm not saying he's right or wrong in this case or what happened. All I'm saying is that the way he took it as a deeply personal attack on everything he was about. So that's, I think, why he's dug his feet in. It's also kind of a Ford family thing. I mean, you're attacking us personally, and, you know, they're a stubborn, proud family, and they don't give an inch. And on this case, he's just dug his heels in. And Robin's right. This is almost 2 years ago. This went before he was mayor. He is mayor now, and it's his obligation, it seems to me, as mayor, to speak to the people through the press and to exclude one part of the, one important part of the press because of a, what is essentially a kind of personal dispute, I think is just not right.
But Jerry, you say the mayor can hang on to this one. Hang on to the football.
I'm sorry?
You say the mayor can stand by this, his position with the star in the football story
two years later? What I'm saying is that this, you know, Robin said, you know, it's been a long time ago, we're moving on. The star might have moved on. He has not. His brother has not. I've talked to them about this, you know, talked about it on the air back when it was more of an issue. I've moved on from the standpoint that, you know, I didn't talk about it again until stuff started getting written in the Star about it, but in May tomorrow now. As a result of this, but I know for a fact that for the mayor and for his brother, and probably, as Marcus says, the whole family, they have not moved on from this story, and they won't move on until, in their view, this gets clarified.
It's an interesting situation, and Royson, I'd like your thoughts on this, too, because, again, the CBC thing, we have a disputed version of events. The CBC, like the Star, is standing by its version of the story, yet they aren't being penalized the way that the Star has been.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're at a journalism foundation discussion. You know, you have a source. You have the standards are you need multiple sources, right? And who you have reason to believe are correct. You run the story. You give the people who are maligned a chance to respond. If they respond and they refute what it is you're running, that's what you do. You run the story. You say, person A, person B says this. The person who they're given the charge against say it's not true. And you know what? Over time, the truth comes out.
Yeah, but what if, what if, and I'm not saying this is the case in the football story, but what if you go out, you get the story, you've got multiple sources, as the CBC said it did in the Mark Delahunty thing, and it turns out the sources were wrong. And it, to me, it seems pretty clear in the CBC case that, at least according to the chief of police, who has actually heard the tapes, that Rob Ford did not call the dispatcher a bitch, did not say I'm Mayor Rob fucking Ford, and so on, which was the allegation in the CBC story. The CBC comes out and said, after its study of the case, and says, well, we had sources, and we're not sure whether the mayor, whether the chief of police is telling the truth. He may have ulterior motives. Well, the chief of police heard the tape of the 911 call. The CBC ran the story without hearing the tape of the 911 call,
and they
used secondhand sources for what was in the call. So it seems to me in that case, it's iffy.
Now, I do see a few hands up in the audience. I just want to let you know we're going to get to some questions from the audience in a little bit here so we can come back to some of these topics. I did want to ask, though, about the bigger issue of access to the mayor and the mayor's schedule. Robin, as a reporter, how has it hindered you not having that weekly schedule? And just for context, under David Miller, usually a week in advance you'd get a look ahead, so you could have a list of three or four different functions where you could find the mayor on any given day. And so if you needed to go interview him about something, on any given day you could find David Miller somewhere and go ask him a question. With Rob Ford, despite attempts, we've asked for a schedule. There's still never been once a schedule provided. Press releases are iffy, saying where he's going to be, and actual access to the mayor to ask questions, I would say, is limited to once a week, once every 2 weeks. So, Robin, I'm curious, how does that hinder your job?
I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't, so don't tell anybody, okay? I almost find, yeah, exactly. It's a little liberating in some ways, to be honest. When nobody knows where the mayor is, there's not a pressure to chase him. There's only so many people in any bureau, and we only have so much time every day. So if you, because he doesn't, you know, say where he is all the time, we are just there, you know, digging up real stories, enterprise journalism, which is really what's the fun stuff to do, and you're not just sitting there in a committee room all the time. I particularly, if you look at the kind of the workload, I guess, in our bureau, I tend to do kind of stuff on my own, which I love. Like, I have no interest in chasing Rob Ford around the city and with a tape recorder and writing the exact same story that 10 other people wrote. The great thing is, with Twitter, you can kind of see where he is because people will say, I just saw him here at T.O. Mayor Rob Ford or something. So Toronto is keeping an eye on the mayor for us, which is great. So, yeah.
I believe your sister publication, The Grid, actually has a Where Was Rob Ford Spotted This Week column.
And it's you can if you put Rob Ford in a story, it will get, I don't know, Kathy back there, if you know the numbers, but like a bazillion hits. People are obsessed with the man, fascinated by him, and they keep us up to speed a lot.
Jerry, has the lack of access to the mayor given you anything less to talk about?
You know, I'm seen oftentimes as maybe I'll bring her name up again. Sue Ann Levy is at the Sun as somebody who's maybe too defensive of the mayor. It's largely because I agree with the policy he came in on. Certainly willing to turn on him if I think it's necessary. I mean, that's what I do. No, you know, I can't get him on very often either. I can't find him most of the time. You know, I have pretty good access to his brother and a few other counselors, but I think everybody else does as well. I think that he should be more clear with everybody, possibly sometimes, by the way, including his staff, as to where he is.
Mm-hmm. Ryson, how have things changed from Mel Lastman to David Miller to Rob Ford in terms of access and that basic information of where and when you can find him?
Oh, greatly. I mean, for me, I didn't necessarily have to follow them around, but it's good. It's always good to know where they are or where they're supposed to be. Talking to one of his allies today, I mean, she said, we haven't seen him in a long time. He hasn't been to my ward in the first few months. He was around a lot, but haven't seen him in 8 months. And it's not just in the ward, but sometimes around here at City Hall, you don't see him as well. So where is he? What's he doing? That's just a basic set of information that you need, you know, as citizens and as people, the watchdogs that you send that you at City Hall, you pay your $1 or your $2 with the newspaper to check and see what this guy is doing. It's just basic stuff. If Robin doesn't want to chase him around, that's fine. But maybe somebody else wants to chase him around. They love doing that. We should be afforded that privilege and that opportunity to follow the mayor around and to know exactly what it is that he's doing.
I mean, Marcus, how far have you had to go to try and find out where the mayor's been?
Well, I mean, the odd thing about the mayor is that, I mean, he's just a complete lone wolf. I mean, he was like this before when he was councillor as well. I mean, he would sort of come and go from city council. I mean, he was sort of there but not there. He would show up for meetings and pipe up, usually about the gravy, and then he would sort of disappear. And he was kind of an absentee. But he's the same as mayor. This is the thing. He marches to his own drum. I think he gets in his car and he talks on OnStar to a lot of his. You know, he spends a lot of time, actually hours and hours every week, responding to constituents' calls.
And he still drives himself around.
Yeah,
he drives himself.
Drives himself around along Dundas Street to City Hall from Etobicoke. And he's out there talking on the phone to people and doing God knows what. But he's not doing the normal kind of mayor stuff.
You've actually put in access to information requests, though.
Oh, yeah. We not only us, but other papers have. And you get back, as I say, these long empty sheets
saying used to be empty.
No, that's right. The first batch came back with a bunch of meetings on, and then we reported, okay, he met with this developer on Tuesday and so on. They went, oh, that's giving him too much. So the next batch came back with these kind of blank sheets.
That's been fun with the mayor's office too, is because they are so new and a lot of the staffers are new, they don't quite know how the things work. Like, I think the freedom of information was a big shock to them. Because they didn't realize their email. I don't know if they didn't realize, but they were much less careful about what they were emailing back and forth to one another in the beginning. And now there's apparently a rule they don't email at all to one another. Mm-hmm. So when you do search for those things, it just comes back completely blank, and things like the agendas are completely blank now too.
Do you think, Royson? Do you think we as Torontonians would be any better served by having more access to the mayor? Would it really change anything at the end of the day?
We don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, being a journalist is like being a fisherman. You know, you're fishing for stuff. You have no idea. You cast your net. You pull it in, and you see what's there. And you say, oh, okay, well, I never thought that. Oh, really? You guys do that? And that's the job. That's how you find things. That you usually just happen on things. Most of this stuff is surprises us when we see it. So that's what you need. You need eyes. You need ears. That's what we're there. We're there for you. We're there for the public. And the more we look, is the greater the likelihood that we'll see things and keep them on the straight and narrow. So access, access, access all the time, 24/7.
I mean, I guess for a piece of context here, the big story of the summer, if you think back, was the mayor's decision not to attend the Pride Parade. That came out of just a random afternoon availability at the Board of Trade, and your colleague Paul Maloney, near the end of the scrum, just threw in this question, "Hey, Mr. Mayor, are you going to the Pride Parade this year?" That story was in the headlines for 3 weeks. Is that what you mean, Royson?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he probably would have gotten there eventually, you know, as we got closer to the Pride Parade, but that's one question you throw out. That's the test of the mayor. You know, you look at the U.S. presidential election. This thing goes on for a year or two. By the time this guy gets, or three or four, by the time this guy gets to be president, he's been vetted. He or she has been vetted. All right? And as the Republican candidates are finding out now, that's what it's there for. You actually vet these people so that when they get in there, you actually know what they're about. Well, we sort of did vet Rob Ford, and it didn't really matter, right? He still won. We knew what we were getting long before he became mayor, and they still voted for him.
Marcus, do you find yourself as a columnist becoming the story now? Because we're in an age where social media is driving a lot of things, but there's also a tremendous amount of scrutiny of City Hall. And as we were talking earlier, you put Rob Ford in something and it generates a tremendous amount of traffic to websites. So as a columnist, do you feel a little more exposed as somebody who covers Rob Ford? I mean, I'll look at stories that end up on the website, and sometimes you get 1,200 comments on a story. Have you opened yourself up? Have you made yourself the story or exposed yourself by virtue of covering Rob Ford? Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, people feel so strongly about Rob Ford, pro or con, that they really react strongly to what you write. And I was very critical during the election campaign of Rob Ford, raked him over the coals for lots of things, and his supporters sent me this floods of poisonous emails about what a communist I was and how, why didn't I go work for the Toronto Star? That really hurt. And stuff like that, because I was, all the people at the Globe said, Marcus is turning into a communist, because I used to be this kind of right-wing guy. And my wife started talking to me again, and all sorts of things happened because Rob Ford was pushing me over to the bright side. And so people, the funny thing about it is people started saying, yay, he's on our side. He hates Ford. He hates everything Ford does, just like me. And then I wrote a column, like today's column, in which I said, you know, Ford's critics may be a bit wrong about this, shutting down all these cuts and so on. And they went, oh, what? You betrayed us. We thought you were on our side. We thought you were with the anti-Ford. So the thing is, I mean, it's very tempting to be in one camp or another when you're writing a column about city, like this, when there's such strong partisan feelings. But you have to resist it and say, you know, I may not be a great fan of Rob Ford, but let's give him credit where credit's due. And, you know, let's remember his critics make mistakes too. So, but it's hard to stick with that because you get a lot of flack from both sides.
What's it like for you, Robin? Because you're not delivering opinion. You're delivering the straight-up news out of City Hall. Do you still get the anger coming back at you?
Yeah, that's been one of the most interesting things about covering Ford is the feedback from readers, pro and against. It's the exact same thing. They're like, you turned. You're supposed to be from the Toronto Star. It's like, what are you guys talking about? I don't know if people really do understand the difference between news reporting and, commentating. And that's a really big challenge. I don't know if counselors understand it either. You could have Royson, who's a columnist, who can say whatever he wants, and that's his job, and to add context from his opinion, and people know where he stands on that, and that they'll hold that up to me about my story and how I'm obviously biased against Ford or the right-wing administration, and at the end of the day, it's like, I don't care at all. I just like a good story.
You get some serious hate mail.
I've shown Jackson some. I've had some really crazy people, threaten me a lot over stuff I've written about for, like, violence and people call in the middle of the night, especially in the campaign. It, because I have my cell phone number out and about. And yeah, it's a little scary, and people are very, very passionate about him either way. But it's difficult. People don't understand that there's a middle ground there.
Jerry, yeah. What happens to the switchboard when you mention Rob Ford?
Well, it's the same thing. And, you know, addressing the ugliness, I see, because I like to go online to read a lot of stories in all of the papers simply because of the comments section underneath and get an idea of what's going on there. In the notes that we received before we did this, we'd like to hear your thoughts on how social media is impacting the way you do your jobs. I don't know that it's impacted the way I do my job, but it certainly gives you an indication of what some of the thinking out there is. And, you know, we all like to think that we're such a peaceful, polite country here in Canada, but oh my God, you know, from either side. I mean, the threats, the ugliness is certainly not exclusive to the people who don't like Ford, or the people who like it going after people like these reporters. I mean, it comes from both sides, and that's the one thing that social media has done is that you have to try not to get caught up in some of that, because it's unbelievable what people think and what they will say, you know, from the comfort of their mom's basement in their Star Trek uniform or whatever, whoever these people are, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead, Royson.
I mean, boy, the way I try to approach my job is to be as pure as possible. That is, not to know what it is that my newspaper has, what views they have on an issue. That's one. I don't want to know what it is that the reporters are writing on the issue. So if Robin's writing the story, I don't want to know her lead. I don't know what position she's taking. I don't talk to her. And I have read maybe 1%, if that. I don't think I've read 1% of the comments online to my columns. I think I've been on, and the reason I went on was because people were telling me, "Oh, have you seen what they're saying about you?" And so I've been on a couple times, and I've read it, and just said, "Oh, no, just no way, forget it." So I don't read it. I haven't looked at the comments to my column in maybe 8-9 months. What I do get is I do get email response, because at the bottom of my column it says, you know, rjames@thestar.ca. So people do send me personal email, and I answer 95% of those. So I respond to those, because those certainly are a lot more moderate, and, you know, they usually have real names and real email addresses, as opposed to the ones on the online. And I respond to those. And I mean, we all face the same things, especially if you give opinions, then you should expect people are going to give strong opinions. And the stronger the opinion is in the column, the stronger the response from the readers. So I'm used to people calling me just about everything. You don't take it personally. And then, you know, you say, yep, I give you my opinions, and I guess I expect you're going to give me yours. And if the person is just really ridiculous, I'll say, okay, I'm thinking of spending the time to respond to you. If you're serious, I will. If you're not, then I won't. And then see if they respond to me, and then sometimes I'll do a, you know, 2 or 3 page response in that case. But if not, if they're really ridiculous, then I just let it go.
All right. With that, I think we'd like to open it up to the floor for questions. What we'd like is if you can come up to the microphone here in the middle, I'd ask you to state your name, your affiliation, if you've got any, and just keep your questions as brief as you can. You can either direct them to an individual on the panel or to the panel as a whole, or if you want to try and get more debate started, feel free. I'll do my best to wrangle everybody in. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name is Bill Doskotch. I'm a journalist with CTV Toronto's website. For one thing, with Mayor Ford and the CBC bitch story, all he has to do to put this to bed is allow access to the 911 recording. Unlike his 2-year vendetta against the Star, he says he wants to move on from it. Well, it seems to me that if he was really, really felt aggrieved by this story and felt the proof was in the tape, he would release it in a heartbeat. So I think, personally, that Kirk Lapointe, the ombudsman of CBC, made a very good call when saying, you know, there might be some problems with this story, but I can't fundamentally say it's wrong, and I can't fundamentally believe the chief of police because he's in a bit of a conflict situation. So until the tape pops up, here we sit.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but actually, that's... Sorry, I've already broken your brevity rule, and that wasn't
okay.
even a question,
yeah.
although it might be fodder for more discussion. But I want to go back, in a way, to the campaign of 2010 and the crazy story of Dieter Donite Henderson. And Rob Ford, if you'll remember, when he had an intruder in his home, what was it, last week, said, I can take care of myself. But if you remember in his scrum about Dieter Donite Henderson, he sounded like he was in fear of his life from an AIDS sufferer that he'd met before and a guy who can barely lift himself off the couch. He said that there was going to be, he was going to see about getting this guy charged. It never happened. But what I want to know is, why didn't the media follow up more on the Dieter Donite Henderson story? And unfortunately, I include myself in that regard.
Yeah, so I guess, Jerry, you had a point on the 911 tape.
Yeah, anybody here a lawyer? Because I'm not, but it's my understanding he can't necessarily just decide on his own. It's illegal to release those tapes. It would be interesting, by the way, for a journalist if they were able to find out who exactly is releasing that information illegally to people at the CBC or wherever else that is happening. And if the CBC thinks they have a story that the police chief of the city of Toronto is a liar, then by God, I hope they get it and prove it, because that's quite an accusation to make. And I don't talk to the police chief, but I've heard secondhand that he's pretty upset about that because he's being called a liar by the CBC.
Well, without any revealing too many trade secrets here for our respective organizations, did either the Star or the Globe, FOI, the 911 calls, did you put in a Freedom of Information request for the 911 tape? Because
that doesn't necessarily mean
yeah.
you'll
get it. I mean, the
process is just...
We have FOI'd them, but...
Yeah, yeah. The mayor has to consent to release
them. Yeah, at the end of the day, if it's a personal... You can release... He could release it on...
And I know for Global's perspective, we did put in an access to information request for the tape, and we were told that if he consented to it, the tape could be released, and he was sent
so
a letter.
So you believe he legally could?
We were told that. And he was sent a letter saying that Global News was requesting his permission to release the tape, and he declined our request to release the tape.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, he did admit afterwards to using the F word in the thing, but not, as he put it, the bitch word. Which was really a good one. I mean, he felt like saying,
I'm
Mr.
I'm sure that word shows up on a lot of 911 tapes. Yeah. Wouldn't you think?
I know, but you wanted to say, Mr. Mayor, the thing is, when you don't want to say bitch, you say the B word, not the bitch word. But that's what he said. I didn't say the bitch word. Well, you just said that. Anyway.
He's not a journalist.
And Royson, you kind of spoke to this earlier, but is there a problem with consistency when it comes to stories from the mayor? As in, is there a deny and then retraction later? Because this goes to the point about the Dieter Donite Henderson story.
I mean, that one is obvious. I mean, that's been proven. You know, the ACC drunkenness stuff, the Miami situation. I mean, that's what he does. It's a typical politician. You catch them in something, you ask them, they say no, they panic, they deny it. And then until you actually can prove it, then they come clean. So... You know, if it's a situation where you don't have the tape, the actual tape, to prove it, then they can deny it from now till eternity. So how do you know what's on the tape? And somebody else says, well, I heard the tape, and he didn't say exactly what it is that CBC said he said. Okay, maybe he didn't say exactly what CBC said he said, but if you release the tape, maybe he said so many other things to, in effect, okay, that's why the people were upset, and that's why they leaked the story. So that's the issue. I mean, I've said enough on that. I think.
All right.
The whole problem with the CBC is that they used quotes around those.
That's
at the end of the day. Is that that to me? What's most fascinating about that whole story is that everyone kind of agrees, including the mayor, what was pretty well kind of said. It's the
exact
specific
words
that everyone, which of course specific words are important, but at the end of the day, we all kind of agree what was on it, and that's what's fascinating to me is there's this big fight about it, but he did swear and call 911 about a comedy crew showing up.
Yeah, but there's a big difference from saying, say, just saying what might be on the tape. You know, there's this fucking freak on my lawn. You better come in and get this. To saying, I'm Mayor Fudd fucking Ford, you bitches, it's so and so on. There's,
are you doing the reenactment?
There's a difference, and the CBC version.
You're kind of enjoying this, aren't you?
I don't really have a potty mouth, but the CBC version made him, you know, look really awful and abusive. So if it was wrong that he used those specific words and just cursed because he was mad, there's a huge difference. And so I think it was really incumbent on them beforehand to have a better source to hear the tape or see a transcript. And it's weaseling out to say afterward, after the chief of police says he's heard the tape and that's not on it, to say, well, we don't really know. It's pretty clear to me that that's not what the mayor said.
Well, I guess my point is that we never got around to talking about the tone of what his call was, and it's all centered around these, like, whether he said bitches. Now, did he say bitches, or did he say, you listen to me, and, like, God was very angry with them, like that, and if we would have just, if that story would have been written in a way that kind of got to the tone of the call, then I think we'd have a better idea, but anyway.
Sir, your question and your name, please.
I'll try and keep this clean. The name is Knight, Tim Knight. I train broadcast journalists and make documentaries. I think we all agree to some degree that our mayor has a very, very small grasp of something called participatory democracy, particularly when it comes to how the hell he's spending his time on the people's business. However, everybody seems to agree, including a couple of people here, that you can get him on the phone at any time. Would any of you like to try that right now? Tell him what's going on and ask for his comment, please. I think Marcus said that he could.
No, I'm going to see if I have his number. I have his brother's number, but that's not what you want to do.
No, I don't want his number. I want you to call him.
No, I don't have his personal number in this phone. I don't.
Marcus, you have his number?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, he gives it out on Jerry's show all the time. But
yeah,
I'm not sure I have it at my phone, so sorry.
Robin, no? Royston?
Sorry, because that was really actually a fun idea.
I think we've tested it since, because when he was a counselor, you could call him and he
would answer. But I want you to test it now.
We have tested it since.
In public.
He doesn't, from my understanding, answer his cell phone that the public has when you just call him. Like the number that everyone has, he doesn't. He will call you back, though. He will definitely call you back. But he's not going to answer it when you...
Okay.
Could one of you then call it and we'll wait for him to call us back? Thank you very much.
We'll send him a tweet. How about that?
Go ahead.
Sue Ann Kelman. I teach at Ryerson School of Journalism. I'm very happy you all have the gift that keeps on giving. What I'm wondering about listening to this is entirely about Rob Ford, which is good because I think the outlets were cutting back on city coverage until he came in and made it exciting. But I'm wondering if there are stories that are not being covered now because it's the day-to-day bread and butter running of City Hall and people are only interested in reading about Rob Ford or listening to and watching Rob Ford. And I'd like to throw in two other questions, very short, just on behalf of the audience. I'd like to know what story the Toronto Star spiked for Royston, and I'd like to know if Marcus's wife is speaking to him this week.
Yeah. Royston, would you like to take that, though? Are there stories we're missing?
I can't remember. I mean, it wasn't important. It wasn't the matter. It was more a legal issue. I think we got lawyered, and they said, "Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe we ought to fix it." And I didn't want to fix it, so they said, "Okay, fine, spike it." And the other one?
Are there stories we're missing at City Hall?
There are always stories we're missing, you know. But the mayor is the big honcho. Everything flows through him. If you're following the mayor, you're following the money and you're following the important things that are happening. So, you know, usually when he comes into the picture, it's because there is some conflict or some opportunity or a chance for a debate and there's going to be a decision that has to be made. And I mean, that's what you want to hear about. We do a lot of stories there that are not, you know, or you know, Rob Ford focused. We do a number of policy stuff. For me, because it's opinions, and the guy is polarizing, so then it's easy to write opinions about him.
I think we do miss some stories, and I do sometimes feel like we get sucked into the Rob Ford vortex. And that's what I was saying earlier, is as much as I absolutely 100% think he absolutely needs to give us his itinerary, the fact that he doesn't means every now and then I get to get away from City Hall and do something else. Like, I've been working on something else this whole week. I haven't been doing any budget stuff, and I've loved every minute of it because I'm sick of it.
So. I mean, Jerry, I mean, it's kind of interesting that the weight loss challenge, for example, ran the news cycle for two full days in the middle of this budget process, which I think a poll out this week showed 65% of Torontonians were aware of this budget cycle, and yet the weight loss challenge dwarfed that for two full days.
Is that a bad thing, by the way, that the mayor, I mean, for people who dislike the mayor, never mind all of that other policy, encouraging people to get in shape, is that a good thing?
It's just, I mean, do you find it interesting that his persona can dwarf sometimes
issues of substance? I've lost 5 pounds so far.
Yeah, you're part of the challenge, right?
No, I did. I joined the challenge, and I've lost 5 pounds so far, and, you know, I got a long way to go. But not as far as the mayor, that's for sure. You know, I was suspected he was being kind to himself when he said 300 pounds of fun, and it turns out he was out by that 10% he wants the departments to cut. So I think that, actually what I told him was, I'll join the challenge and I'll agree to 10% as a weight loss, but I might act like the library board and come back with 5.9. I think that was actually a good thing to do, and the fact that if it engages people and a bunch of people start to try and get in shape, that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing for any mayor to do. The mayor of Calgary has joined in to encourage Calgarians to do it. That's
a good thing. Yeah. I mean, Marcus, the Rob Ford we knew as a councillor, it was still all about his persona. His persona kind of dwarfed policies at times.
You mean when he was a
when he was a councillor? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, even now, he does kind of overwhelm the landscape, so to speak. But on the fat story, I think a lot of people thought it was a kind of a cheap stunt, and yeah, a lot of his critics were even saying he was doing it just to get attention away from his nasty budget, which I think is just kind of silly. I think actually Rob and Doug actually did get together and say, we're too fat, and why don't we do this fun thing? And it was a fun thing. I mean, does it make us... cheap as journalists that we covered it and there were tons of cameras there? Well, I don't think so. People are fascinated by Rob Ford. People are fascinated by the fact of how big he is. And I just think it's an interesting story. And as I say, he might be doing something good for the public. But just as a side note, I stood on the scale yesterday myself, just after Doug, who's lost 6 pounds so far in the first 2 days. And I'm exactly half of Rob's weight. He's the same height.
You're half
as me.
As much fun.
So he's twice the man I am.
He's twice as much fun, at least.
No, it's a legitimate story. I mean, the mayor's weight is a concern to a lot of people. I've gotten enough comments about it. So it's a legitimate story, and it's fun.
Yeah, some of his critics, I get this all the time, and the feedback that I get is, plus he's fat and he should lose weight if he thinks he can run a city. A fat guy like that can't run a city. Well, if he skinnies up, it'll take that away from them at least.
And by the way, I just phoned the mayor. Got voicemail. Leave a message. That's it. No, I mean, what? Leave a message. Say what? Call Royson at the CJF meeting? Okay. Okay, fine. Let me try that again.
While you're doing that, can we take our next question? Your name, please.
Hey, I'm David Topping. I work for The Grid, which, I should full disclosure, is owned by the Star Media Group. My question is about unnamed sources and a public figure, which it seems as though one of the issues with the Star's report about the football player was that it wasn't person A said this about Rob Ford and person B said this about Rob Ford. It was several unnamed sources. And the CBC was the same thing. So I guess I'm wondering what the panel thinks about unnamed sources speaking about a public figure.
I use, I write a lot about, police and Rob Ford stories. And I have to use unnamed sources because they would be reprimanded otherwise for me getting information from them. That's just kind of part of it, especially because even away from, the police aspect, day-to-day City Hall stuff, because the mayor doesn't talk to us and there is a boycott, a lot of the people in his inner circle can't openly tell us stuff that's happening because they will be reprimanded by the mayor. there's been a couple times when counselors have spoken to the Star and we've written stories about things that they have been, you know, slapped on the wrist. Like, you know, if you're going to leak that to somebody, if you're going to talk to somebody about that, like, you should do it to the Sun or something like that. Like, that's happened. They've gotten in trouble for talking to us. So at the end of the day, we always try to disclose as much information about who that person is, whether they're, you know, a high-level political source or a, you know, a legal expert or something like that. So you kind of give people a general sense of where you're going, and your editors know who your sources are. And there's a discussion and, about that. And you, again, you, the golden rule, you have three sources if you're saying that.
All right, next question.
Hi, my name is Ronan O'Byrne, and I'm unaffiliated, unfortunately. But I'm wondering, and while I don't doubt that this is an important issue, both the boycott and the mayor's general media availability, while I don't doubt that that's an issue, I'm wondering if, do any of you think that this gets more coverage in your respective outlets than readers particularly want to read about? In other words, do you think this has any impact on the mayor's popularity with the voters, or do you think that this is a story that most of them read briefly and then move on to the budget story?
The people who read the Star don't aren't going to vote for the mayor anyway, it would seem. I'm pretty sure the mayor thinks that. And, you know, for everybody else, I actually don't think they care about it as much as the Star does and maybe the media does. I think that that people get the information they want, as I said at the outset here, through various media outlets if they want to. And so it's not like they're being deprived of what's going on at City Hall from that standpoint, I don't think. I think that's how a lot of people see it.
Well, the one thing that's... Sorry, Royson, really quickly. This... we existed in this for almost a year before anyone even really knew it. Like, people knew about it, but we didn't report on it. It didn't come up until Adam Vaughn moved a motion at a committee that would have required the mayor's office to send all publications from its office to all media outlets. The Star didn't say anything about this until it became a matter of policy at City Hall, if you will, and the press gallery had to... I'm not even sure if they actually did, but deputed at committee, and it came up, and that's why we started talking about it. So we haven't actually really been talking about this that long, just on that front.
Royson?
Well, it's not like we didn't want to talk about it, really. I mean, we just decided not to and figured that, you know, maybe, okay, the guy is mad. He'll be mad for 6 months. Okay, fine. He's mad for a year. Okay, and after a while, listen, we really had to take a stand. And so the publisher wrote that on the front page. Frankly, we can do our job. We're big boys. We're
big girls.
We got big girls. And we got lots of people, and we have lots of sources, right? So we can get around the ban. That's not the issue. The issue is that you shouldn't have to get around the ban. And if you have people who can't get around the ban, then what? So it's the principle of the thing. I don't care if he talks to me ever. As a matter of fact, it's great. Better. Right, you're relieved of having to say, well, the mayor offered this spin on it. I mean, now that he has a new guy in his office, a mayor, so at least the mayor talks, and, you know, I'm writing the column after the budget debate, so I say to Amir, come over. You know, you may want to put your spin on this in the column I'm writing tomorrow, and he puts his spin on it, and he gets it in the paper. I mean, that's smart politics. So if they don't want to practice smart politics, that's fine. I can still write my column 3 days a week. Whether you talk to me or not, it's coming out 3 days a week. So it's stupid not to want to talk to me. So it doesn't really matter. But the principle of the thing, if you are in a municipality and you're the only newspaper and the mayor decides not to talk to you, or you got two newspapers and you decide, well, I'm gonna keep these guys away, I'm gonna shut them out because I don't like what they're saying about me. That's wrong. It's against everything that, as a journalist, you stand for. So that's why John Hendrick put that on the front page and said, hey, we're challenging this because of the journalistic principles that's at stake here.
Next question.
Hi, my name is Glenn Kauth and I work at Thomson Reuters. My question is, I guess, three things are quite linked. For the two who are at the Toronto Star, I'm wondering whether the reporter on the football story did make, I guess, very serious attempts to talk to the alleged victim of the roughing up. Secondly, for the panelists in general, whether they would believe that the Star would have had an obligation to do so before publishing it. And thirdly, whether there is potentially some sort of, I guess, resolution if we were to acknowledge that, if the Star were to acknowledge that in print, that there was some a pretty severe obligation to do that.
It's obviously kind of difficult to talk about that story. Just, I'm putting that out there. Rob Cribb is the reporter on that. It's Rob Cribb and Chris Rashoey. And as Rob Cribb taught me at Ryerson when I was there. And as far as I'm concerned, he's the best journalist at the Toronto Star, like hands down. I was sitting next to Rob. He was my desk mate when that story was happening. So I have an idea of the reporting that went into it, and it was incredible. And that story went through the lawyering process. And if you read it, I don't understand. The problem with that whole story is when people talk about it, they completely misrepresent what it was about. And as Royson's already explained, to the point when I'm not even sure if anyone even remembers what that story said. So I just, I guess, yeah, like go back and read it. And it's like, oh, yeah, there is this. He's not allowed to coach football for a certain school board because of an incident with a player. That incident might have been verbal. Some said it might have been physical. The mayor says this. Moving on. Like that's the physical wasn't even the first reference, and that's a conscious decision that we make. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's my thought. I 100% support the paper and how we handled that and the reporters involved.
Royson and then Jerry after that.
All right.
Robin really just summed it up perfectly. I'm looking at the story right here. It's bulletproof. I don't know what it is that you need to, that we would need to acknowledge.
Both of you have ignored his second point.
Which is?
Did I have an obligation to talk to the player before printing the story?
And how, I just, this is the difficult thing, but do you know he didn't talk to the player?
I don't know. He's asking a question, and I'm kind of interested in the answer.
Don't know. I don't know if he talked to the player or not.
Do you?
I'm saying that there are a lot, there were, of course, if you can imagine, if you look at Rob Cribb's body of work and his work ethic, I think that you can think, when you're looking at a story like that, and there's discussions about speaking with many people involved, you can see how that story took place and evolved as a story. Does that, I'm kind of dancing around here, but.
I can address the third point from one perspective, because I do talk to the mayor from time to time, and I talk actually fairly often to Doug Ford. I would say the answer is no, there isn't going to be a resolution, because their position is there'll be a resolution when the Star apologizes for the story. As you can see, the Star stands by their story, so it's a stalemate and it's not going to change.
Marcus, you staying out of this one? All right. Any more questions? Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. Eric Morse of No Reputable Affiliation. I realize that this is about municipal politics and that therefore we're focusing on a city that happens to be run by someone who is rather unusual. But I wonder how this reflects back and relates to the fact that the Prime Minister of this country has successfully and continuously boycotted the national media en masse since taking office. Does anyone think that there might be a trend here? And I'd like to hear your reflections on it.
Who wants to take that one?
Marcus.
Well, I mean, there is something Harper-like in Ford's press management style. I mean, Stephen Harper came in and immediately set a very controlling media thing. But I think what's different is that in a centralized system and a party system like you have in Ottawa, he has a lot more control over his ministers, over the civil service. And City Hall, as I said earlier, is a bit of a sieve. I mean, the Ford's allies will talk to us and talk to the Star, and civil servants will. So even if he wanted to be put a lid on everything, he couldn't. He can put a lid on his own pronouncements, but that's about it.
Anyone else? No? Any more questions from the audience? What was that? Come on back up if you like, or if you can project.
Lady here.
I guess the only thing I'll say is I am blown away every single day by how much people know the completely boring, inane stuff that comes out of City Hall. Like, this city really did know there was a budget and knew exactly the exact dollar amount that was proposed to be cut. I think that is the one amazing thing about Rob Ford, is that he really has injected, injected a passion into this city about local politics, and you can really realize how it impacts you. And on the point you said about, you know, Calgary becoming the next beacon of head offices, like those types of things, I think this, to Sue Ann's point earlier, sometimes we get drawn away from doing other stuff like that, but at the same time, when we're writing about the leadership of our city, they are kind of interwoven, but we could probably do a better job of adding more context of Rob Ford's persona and how that impacts the city.
The reason we're drawn away from that is it's not on the agenda, right? We usually find these things out because there's a staff report or there's discussion of that type of issue at a committee. And based on that discussion or based on somebody coming in to talk about that issue, then as reporters, we are tweaked to it, and then we follow up on it. Okay, so if that's not on the agenda, if that's not being discussed, then we don't even know about it. That's why it's not there. What's being discussed and why people are engaged in the city is the fear factor, right? The guy got elected with a mandate to shrink government, right, to lay off people, and to cut costs. And that's the fear factor. And so all the people who are affected by that, and whether we like it or not, there are thousands of people that are affected by that one way or another, they are now agitated. And so when you bring in KPMG to do a core service review, and that core, and then they say, oh yeah, this is great, this is gonna fix our budget problems, blah, 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 and you start looking at a whole bunch of stuff that you say, whoa, wait a second, is that, you call that gravy? So then that creates all the churning about in the city. So, you know, I'm not sure if it's an engagement in civic affairs or it's a fear factor. I'm leaning more to thinking that it's a fear factor. I mean, the stuff on the waterfront, you saw how quickly the intelligentsia of the city really got going on the waterfront. That was amazing, that code blue thing that they set up. And that's because they felt that what the things that they fought for and established were being threatened. And people respond to threats a lot easier and a lot quicker than they do to, you know, normalcy. So they feel threatened, and they're going to rise up and speak up against it.
Yeah,
we don't know about the threat of losing head offices to Calgary. So,
but can I ask a quick question? Because I don't have a response, I have a question. Who told you that at the Robin School? Because I want to talk to that person on my show. That is a story.
Yep.
And I'm sure John Tory, who's also a fellow talk show host now at the station, would also be interested in that story.
Yeah,
All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I was just going to add about the engagement thing. I mean, I think arguably people are more engaged in city politics now than they were when David Crombie was mayor in the 70s. I would say people are more interested talking about civic politics more than they have in 30 years. And the reason, like it or not, is Rob Ford. I mean, he is a fascinating, galvanizing, polarizing figure, but he's got all of us talking. And that budget was the most closely followed budget for the last 6 months and climaxing this week than the city has seen in I don't know when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, with that, I think we should probably wrap things up here. I want to thank all the members of the panel who've been here tonight for excellent debate and discussion. Robin Doolittle from the Toronto Star, Marcus G from the Globe and Mail, Jerry Agar from News Talk 1010, and Royson James from the Toronto Star as well. And here's Beth Haddon to wrap things up.
Here's Beth Haddon to thank Jackson and to thank all the panelists. I think I found everything you had to say very interesting. I'm thrilled that you and Rob Ford have politicized the community and got people involved and active. So thank you for that, and thank you for your voluntary tonight. Let's have a round of thanks.
Thanks for coming.
Yes, and I would like to thank you for coming and thank you for your questions and invite you to move to the back of the room for refreshments and further conversation. Or so please help yourselves.